May it please the court, I'm Cameron Gilbert for the appellant Thormack LLC, DBA McCormick's Whiskey Grill. I'm going to assume from what I've seen already that your honors are familiar with the facts and just get right into
the argument. Let me just kind of cut to the chase here. This is one of the most interesting set of briefs I've read in the almost 18 years that I've been on the court, because essentially it seems to boil down to an argument to this court that you've got a business model, your client has a business model which cannot comply with the statutory scheme. The law is dumb in modern times because it I don't think there's any question it's sort of a relic of the post-prohibition days. But in any event, you assign error to the fact that the agency charged with enforcing the law chose to enforce the law. And, you know, it's curious that you're asking a court to basically say to an agency, you should not enforce the law in this instance because for practical reasons.
And to respond, our argument is a little more nuanced than that. We do agree it's dumb, and you should so hold. The law is bad, but nonetheless,
we typically don't tell the General Assembly what we think of their laws.
However,
we often think bad things about their laws, but we just don't say them publicly.
There's two aspects to this. One is the statute is written permissively to allow the board to say, even though there is a technical violation, we will excuse it or disregard it here. And the majority, by their own words, doesn't understand they have that authority. It's not a situation where the majority said, we have the ability to impose no penalty, but we decide a penalty is appropriate here. They perceive that we must impose some penalty, even though, by their own admission, you've complied with the purpose of the statute, and in fact, the statute prompts a type of business that goes against its very purpose.
Well, they reduced the penalty that the hearing officer set by a significant amount, but your argument is that they just completely missed the boat in the cause. They could have given nothing as a penalty, and they didn't.
My argument is the majority did not perceive that they could give nothing as a penalty. They assumed they must do something, which is wrong, by the way the statute's written.
I mean, the analogy seems to me here is as if this were a criminal case, you coming in here and saying that because some Commonwealth attorney somewhere decided that they had an obligation to actually enforce the laws that are on the books, when they clearly have the discretion not to do so, we should order them, we should send the case back and order them to consider the fact that you have the inherent discretion essentially to ignore the plain language of the law.
That's not what I'm saying. If the Commonwealth attorney said, I must enforce the law in every circumstance in which it's violated, regardless of whether it's just or proper, I'm compelled to do so, any judge would certainly say, that's not correct. You're not required to. You have that discretion. The majority here, as pointed out by the dissent, misperceived. They said, we cannot ignore it. Actually, they can for two reasons.
Should this court be in a position of telling government agencies that they're free to ignore the law whenever they feel like it?
You should tell them when they're wrong about the legal standard they're applying to the case, which is what happened here. The majority of the board said, we are required to impose some penalty no matter the merits of the case. And that is wrong by the way the statute's written, and also by substantial compliance doctrine. If
you're not contending that you didn't violate the law. I mean, you couldn't make the 60-40 ratio.
The math is the math.
The math is the math. Yeah.
We would say we substantially complied. Whether that's a violation or not is a gray area, but it technically we violated.
The board concluded that factually you're in violation of the law, and you're really not contesting that, as I understand it.
We can't. The math is the math.
So the argument, though, is that no penalty should be imposed because notwithstanding the technical violation of the law, you argue that you didn't violate the spirit of the law, essentially. Is that correct?
It's most of the way there, but I would again say the difference is we're arguing, one, that under substantial compliance doctrine, you don't have to meet this threshold precisely to comply. Substantial compliance doctrine would apply and say, well, you're at 57, or it's 60, it's 55-45, you're at 53-47, but we're going to excuse that violation based on all these other factors.
I won't presume to speak for my two colleagues, but for my own part, the separation of powers doctrine is something that we take very seriously in Virginia. It's mentioned not once but twice in the Constitution of Virginia. And that means that the judicial branch typically is not empowered to invade the province of either of the other two branches. Now, the legislative branch decides what the law is. And as Justice Scalia pointed out in an opinion some time back before his death, a law can be both economic folly and constitutional. So it's not for us to second-guess the policy decisions made by the General Assembly as a court. Neither, it seems to me, is it our role to second-guess the enforcement decisions made by the executive branch. They can clearly choose when, how, and or even if to enforce a particular law, and whatever we might think personally about that as individuals, that's not something the courts typically can regulate.
And we understand and respect that, but again, what we're saying here is, one, the statute says may. So the legislature said, contemplated circumstances where that ratio would be violated, yet no penalty would be imposed, or they would have said must or shall. They said may. It's not a bright line.
But you would agree that the agency action and what they do once they find that a violation has occurred is a discretionary act.
As long as they are aware and perceive the scope of their discretion and apply it accurately.
Which brings me to my next point, which was cited in the New York Street case, and this goes to Judge Humphrey's point. Judicial interference is permissible only for relief against the arbitrary or capricious actions that constitutes a clear abuse of the delegated discretion. So where would you say that the action of the agency here is arbitrary or capricious?
Well, first I would say the abuse of discretion is in applying the wrong legal standard. If the majority perceive that they were required to impose some penalty when they are in fact not, it needs to be sent back down with the instruction from the court, not how to rule, but you are not required to impose a penalty here, now decide what you're going to do. But the second piece of it is, what makes it arbitrary and capricious is they said the only negative finding is you didn't meet the ratio. You run the business comporting with the statute. The purpose of the ratio is met. You sell more food than liquor by volume, which no other restaurant in this state can probably claim. My client could pour 100,000 gallons of beer down people's throats and only sell $4,000 of food. But he actually sells a significant amount of food, and compared to by volume on the alcohol, only it's significantly more food than alcohol.
And I think we understand your argument on that, but isn't that an argument for the General Assembly? Because they have actually, and they've revised this statute. They've amended it of recent.
One, the Assembly has left latitude there when saying may. Two, they're slow to act, and my client is trying to survive. And thirdly, I would get back to substantial compliance doctrine, which says you have a rule, you're close enough in this circumstance, based on all these other factors, to allow, you were to say that you would either deem the violation disregarded or we're going to excuse it, the technical violation. We're not asking the Court of Appeals to overrule. I mean, I think the record is clear, but what I think is irrelevant. We're not asking the Court of Appeals to overrule and make a decision and say that there's a substantial compliance here and that. We want the court to send this back with the correct instruction. This is the scope of your discretion, which you misapprehended.
Well, but help me.
And secondly, this doctrine applies.
They misapprehended that because I'm looking at the last paragraph of the board's opinion, where it talks about it's going to reduce the penalty and it's going to step outside of the guideline because it doesn't think that the penalty that the hearing officer issued was correct or it was appropriate. And he goes, while a departure from the guidelines is justified here, the board cannot ignore that the legislature continues to require mixed beverage restaurants to maintain a certain food-beverage ratio. And the board must be mindful of its statutory obligation to annually review such ratio pursuant to the statute. Accordingly, the board is of the opinion that the circumstances present in the case warrant imposition of a penalty, consistent with that imposed for first offense of this nature prior to the guidelines becoming effective on January 1st, 2014. Where does that indicate?
They can't ignore it. They say they cannot when they can. They absolutely can.
Well, where does it say they are saying they
their own words. They say we can't ignore it. They absolutely have the discretion to ignore it because the statute says may.
They choose to. What they're saying is we think we're stepping outside of the guidelines, but we think because of our responsibilities to monitor this annually, that a penalty is required or deserved here.
But a penalty is not required. Well, that was my misstatement.
They said a penalty.
First of all, I think my reading of the quote was they said we cannot ignore it.
They cannot ignore the violation.
They can, though, under the way the statute's written and substantial compliance doctrine. Maybe ignore is not the right term, but they can certainly excuse it.
Excuse me, let me finish the question, please. Judge Beals and I have been trying to get a word in edgewise here. We're trying to get to the same point, which is simply you assert that the board exercised no discretion whatsoever. I think the language Judge Beals just read reflects precisely an exercise of discretion. They're saying, you know, we've reviewed this, we've taken these extenuating circumstances into account. We cannot ignore the fact that you violated the law, but we are imposing this lesser penalty because of these extenuating circumstances. If that isn't an exercise of discretion, I don't know what is.
We're not saying they did not exercise a discretion. We're saying they exercise it under the misperception that it was limited to imposing some penalty. When in fact, maybe ignore is not the right term of art for legal. I use that word because it was the word they used in the decision. They have the discretion to either impose no penalty or apply substantial compliance and say you substantially complied. The majority, by the way that they wrote their decision, did not comprehend they had that discretion. So it needs to be sent back so that they can be told you do in fact have that discretion. And if they apply it and don't give us the result we want,
Let me get to something. And when I read this, it was interesting to me because what your client is doing is a very, what I would like to consider, a nuanced business. They're pouring high quality alcohol. And as I was doing the math in my head, I was thinking, wow, if they pour a shot of Louis XIV, they're going to have to sell a whole lot of food to make up for that one shot. And if you've got a guy that comes in with four of his friends and he's got money, they pour four shots. Goodness gracious, they're never going to catch up.
Your Honor has nailed it on the head.
But then I started thinking about something that I enjoy doing, and it's my only vice. And I smoke a cigar every now and then. And there were rules that were implemented that said you cannot smoke in restaurants anymore. And there were a couple of restaurants that my wife went to, and I went to, where we used to smoke a cigar afterwards. What people then did is they said, okay, we're aware of the new law, and we're aware of the requirements with regard to what you can and cannot do, so we're going to come up with a legislative exception that you can smoke cigars in clubs, private clubs. You can smoke cigars in certain environments. In other words, you can do certain things that the legislature has allowed you to do, and you must adapt your business model to comport with the new requirements. And it seems to me that maybe that's the remedy that you should be seeking as a legislative fix as opposed to a judicial fix.
And my response to answer your question, and I know I'm going in my rebuttal, that route has been tried. But the legislature sloth, my client, it's progressive discipline. He had a second violation the following year. It's not before you yet, or may not get before you at all, but they imposed a higher fine. If it was just $500 every year, it's a cost of doing business. The other thing is my client can't adapt or change his business model because he can't charge more for food to make it up for the simple reason that people won't pay it. A customer comes to his restaurant looking for that high-priced alcohol, and his entrees are priced between $22 and $30.
Never make it up.
Well, and he can't, if he charges any more, if he says, I'm going to charge $50 or $100 an entree, they'll just go eat somewhere else and come buy the liquor anyway, and he's in a worse position.
Now, I personally have no problem with your client's business model, but if the General Assembly does, for whatever reason, if they make a determination that, you know, here, this is what we're going to require, and a business model cannot accommodate that. Maybe they don't want your client's business here in the Commonwealth, but is that something that's reviewable by us?
I think, one, the legislature is not opposed to my client's business model because they made the statute permissive and said may instead of must or shall, as they did elsewhere in the same scheme. There are certain penalties that cannot be excused. This is not one of those. Secondly, substantial compliance doctrine absolves all of this because it gives the board the latitude that they perceive they don't have to fashion something that allows the business to operate and still pays proper due to the statute. And I just want to be clear, if I wasn't in the briefs, we're not asking this court to overrule the board or substitute its judgment for that of the board. We're saying the board operated under a mistaken legal parameter that this court should inform them of the correct situation, being that the statute is permissive, they have the discretion to impose no penalty, and two, substantial compliance doctrine does apply here. And then the case can be reevaluated under the proper legal standard, and we'll see where the dominoes fall at that point. Thank you.
Thank you.
Good afternoon, Your Honors.
Good afternoon.
May it please the Court, my name is Jim Flaherty, and I'm here representing the ABC Board. From the ABC's perspective, this is a fairly straightforward case. We would ask that you affirm the Circuit Court's decision.
Well, let me ask counsel, your opponent just indicated that the language Judge Beals read from the board's decision in this case, where they said we cannot ignore the violation, essentially means that we should interpret that to mean the board saying we cannot do anything but impose a penalty, this particular penalty. People throw that, throw language like that around all the time. Now, I don't know how many times I've read a circuit judge saying, in a criminal case to a young defendant, I'm sorry, this is your third time around. I can't ignore the fact that you've done this, so I'm going to give you some time. In context, he's not necessarily saying I don't have the discretion to do anything else. In context, he's basically saying, in this particular circumstance, I've decided that there's no other practical alternative that will get the point I'm trying to make across but to do what I'm about to do. So, what's your position as to how we should take the board's action in this regard?
Well, I agree with you when you said earlier that the board didn't say that they couldn't ignore the fact that they had some discretion. The board was saying we can't ignore the fact there was a violation of the statute, which is pretty clear. You either meet the ratio and sell the proper amount of food or you don't. Where the board has discretion is in imposing some form of penalty. The guidelines, to get into the substantial compliance doctrine, the guidelines almost, if you will, somewhat take into account, because if your ratio is between 44 and 45%, it's written warning. It's still a violation of the statute, 4.1210, but you get a written warning. Between 30 but less than 44, then it depends on how many times it's come before the board. First time up, it's 30-day suspension, or in lieu of 30-day suspension on your license, you have a 15-day suspension and a $1,000 civil penalty. And it does get
let's
progressive.
Look at the word may that Mr. Gilbert has emphasized to us. And that's something Ms. Napier, Commissioner Napier, noted in her dissent. She specifically talked about it and said may. General Sims' use of the word may in the statute allows us to not impose a penalty here. If she had prevailed, and that had been the decision of the ABC board, should we affirm that?
Yes, I think the ABC board has the ability, if given the circumstances of the case.
If they chose to give no penalty at all.
They have that discretion. In this case, they chose not to.
I think what I'm hearing Mr. Gilbert say, and I apologize to him if I have mischaracterized it, is that the structure for dealing with these kinds of circumstances is a structure that was not envisioned in his client's nuanced business. In other words, when the ABC and the General Assembly came up with all these percentages, it did not anticipate that there would be a place that would sell high-end liquor and also be a restaurant. So therefore, since that was not reasonably anticipated, the board was wrong, incorrect as a matter of law, by saying or suggesting that it was required to impose a very, from its perspective, high monetary sanction. And that the board's failure to recognize that it was not required to pay this, to impose this high financial sanction, was a misinterpretation of its own rules. I think that that's what he's trying to say. What would be your response to that, sir?
I don't think it's necessarily a misinterpretation of its own rules. I think if there's a concern here or an issue here, it's not the statute. It's the licensee's business model. We have over 4,900 licensees, mixed beverage licensees in the Commonwealth. The vast majority of them are able to meet this ratio. In fact, the licensee in this case has actually met the ratio several times, most recently in the most recent year that ended in February of 2017.
But that's dependent upon this high roller not coming in and buying this high-end liquor.
That's correct, Your Honor. But that's, the licensee applied for a license knowing the statutory structure. If it doesn't work for him, that's not necessarily the statute or the board's fault. That would be, unfortunately, a poor business decision.
The General Assembly has amended the statute here on several recent occasions, right?
I think the most recent occasion was back in the 1990s, okay. Your Honor. But it has been before the General Assembly, at least in the last 2 years. In 2016, I believe it was
bill to amend it,
House Bill 219, which proposed to lower the percentage to 25%, a 25%, 75% split for food and liquor. That bill failed. And then most recently in 2017, it was Senate Bill 970, and that actually proposed a graduated system where above $10,000 in monthly food sales, there would be no ratio, and between $4,000 and $10,000, the ratio was lowered to 35%. That still failed as well. So it's been before the General Assembly. This is the ratio is a creature of statute. It's with the General Assembly to make the changes, and they just have chosen not to do so at this point.
Is it fair to say that the ABC board then, counsel is arguing the ABC board has complete discretion here with the May language, your opposing counsel, and that really it didn't have to impose any penalty here or in future violations if it chose not to because they're essentially in substantial compliance, but even putting that aside, they don't have to impose a penalty. Do you agree with that?
I don't agree with that, because the purpose of the statute is to ensure that the licensees are complying with the statute to make sure food is sold with the alcohol.
So your position would be that if the board were to impose a nominal penalty, that would be inconsistent with its delegated authority?
No, I would not. The board has the ability, I would say that the board has the ability to deviate from the guidelines, but to just continue to ignore the guidelines, I don't think that would be in
suit. So if Commissioner Napier's position, you agree, was okay under the law here in this case, but might not be if continuing violations occurred?
If continuing violations occurred, or if there was just, if it were, hey, we're only selling 15% food versus liquor, if we were truly kind of falling to that bar model, which we don't have in the Commonwealth, we have restaurants that sell alcohol, then I think that would be inconsistent with the board's charge.
Well, and if it is inconsistent with the board's charge, I guess the remedy is not necessarily us, it's removal of the commissioners and replacement by another governor or something. So
that or having the legislature change the statute. In closing, Your Honor, I would ask that you find that the board's action is not arbitrary. The statute is fairly clear. The board had the authority to impose the penalty. There was an actual violation of 4.1210, and ask that you affirm the circuit court. Thank you, Your Honor.
I'll give you, you had about 5 seconds left. I give
two
you
points, very brief.
Okay, all right, I'll give you a minute.
Thank you.
One, if the majority, I gather from the argument that it's been conceded that the board had the authority to impose no penalty. If the majority perceived that, the dissent makes no sense. Commissioner Napier wouldn't have gone in great lengths explaining why. She would have said, we all agree that we could do nothing. I think we should do nothing here. They disagree. Secondly, the majority would have said in its opinion, instead of saying we can't ignore this, they would have said, while we're not required to find a penalty, we're going to find one here because. There are no negative findings of fact against my client other than the math problem. And in conclusion, or secondly, there's no dispute here. My client sells plenty of food. They sell more food. They sell almost $160,000 of food a year. It's probably higher now. And they sell more food by volume than alcohol, which no other, with maybe a handful of establishments my clients can say, no other licensee can say that. Other licensees aren't a good comparison because beer and wine don't count, and they pour copious amounts of it. And with the conclusion, I would ask that this case, in addition to resting on the other arguments in the brief, this case be sent back to be evaluated under the proper legal standard by the board, with the understanding that they are not required to penalize my client in this case, as they thought they were, and
All right, thank you, Mr. Gilbert. I think we understand what you want. I appreciate your argument. We agree, counsel. And then the next case on the docket is Lawrence Maria Smith versus Commonwealth.